You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Welcome to the Big Fight Live podcast for William Hill. Anthony Joshua versus Joseph Parker. And as ever, I'm Gareth A. Davis, and my sparring partner, my verbal sparring partner, is the one and only Radio Raheem with his dulcet American tones.
Dulcet. You always come up with these new, fancy, unnecessary words. Radio Raheem here with Gareth Davies for the Joseph Parker, Anthony Joshua mix-up here in Cardiff. I like to call it two whales in Cardiff, but, I got bested with this introduction, so...
Can't take a compliment, but never mind.
I don't know what it means.
Dulcet means sweet.
Yeah, I'm more sultry.
He's sweet, he's sultry, he can be whatever he wants. But you know what? I've got to say this. Radio Raheem has been very accurate thus far, predicting Anthony Joshua's finishes in his fights, how the fights go, how his development will go in the staging of these events, because you take part in all of them. You're one of the very few Americans who travels over here to follow this fighter's journey. What have you made? It's fine for us Brits to talk about Joshua. What have you made of him in this camp and this build-up from other times you've been over here, Radio?
You know, I was discussing earlier with another journalist about making predictions and being correct, and you never really know, which is why we keep turning up for the fights. Sometimes you have enough information on two guys to really build the fight in your mind, and they do what they're supposed to do because it's what they've been doing before. For this fight, I think we're going to see Joshua do something that he's supposed to do that he hasn't been doing before. I feel like he's coming in better prepared for this fight, and that doesn't mean he's been ill-prepared for other ones, but his experience now, and we've talked about every time Joshua fights, this guy has more experience than him, but Joshua is the bigger fan favorite. He's the star. He's the guy that we expect to win.
He's a favorite with the odds.
It's Joshua versus experience all the time, but now Joshua is now gaining the kind of experience that you have to consider when he enters the ring. He's talking about his conditioning. He's talking about the difference between going into camp to get fit and going into camp fit to get ready. And that's what he's done for this fight. That's the difference, and I think that'll be the difference on Saturday night.
I think you're right, and I think there's also nuance within that as well, Raheem, that one of the things that he's developing into now is being more instinctive about how he feels about his actual boxing. Some of the things that he's uncovered, or his team have uncovered, they've monitored his... This is really weird, because a lot of fighters don't do this. Not only is he with an old-school trainer, Rob McCracken, who really knows movement and shape and styles in boxing, he's working with a team now that monitor his sweat in training, that monitor his moods. It sounds ridiculous, all this, but they've got ultra monitoring going on. So they've transformed... Yeah, they've transformed... It's kind of like old-school with sports science. And they've transformed his, and I think we see it in him, they've transformed his circadian rhythms, if you like, to, he does all his boxing in the morning and his sparring in the morning, because he was finishing late at night and he wasn't getting enough sleep. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't sleep because he was very active after 15 round sparring sessions at 10 o'clock at night. Doesn't matter on fight night. But when he's training in camp, he wanted to go for a run at 7 in the morning as well, a 6-mile run with all the guys training at the English Institute of Sport. And they found it was affecting his mood. I don't know what you make of all this, whether it's a mumbo-jumbo, a hokum-pokum. But, you know, what I like about them, there's always something new coming up. He's been consulting Vladimir Klitschko about his jab and how he used his jab. We know what was behind that. Manny Steward was behind that big jab, that half step back, and it kept Klitschko kind of dominant in the division against smaller guys for nigh on a decade.
I come down on the Freddie Roach professorial opinion about all this extra added sports science and conditioning coaches and trainers and, you know, monitoring of electronic systems. I'll call it bull pucky for the sake of this
bull
broadcast.
Pucky. Bull pucky.
But, you know, Freddie has a different word than pucky after bull. So I'm from that school. Listen, it's grit. It's determination, and it's in its simple sense. When you're a young guy, you think you're invincible, you can do anything, you can show up to camp fat, you can slim down and get ready just in time for the fight, and you're knocking everybody out inside of four rounds, why not, right? You start talking trash to your trainer, telling him you know what's best. But as you mature, not just as a fighter, but as a man, you realize that there are other ways to approach life, and I think that that's the place that Josh was in. Yeah, okay, his emotions and whatnot. I think he's just a maturing guy. I don't know that we need an app to figure that out. If he's decided to stay in shape instead of get in shape, that's going to make a very basic, simple difference. We can call that science if you want, but it's a science of mind. It's a science of being a prepared, mature, professional adult that's getting in here to not just win championships, but to carry boxing on his back, and that is also the kind of conversation he's having now that he wasn't willing to take on before. To me, that's the difference. The rest of it, I think, is just guys trying to keep their jobs.
Yeah, I think there's an element of that. But I think he's always looking to create the edge. I think that's Shelley Finkel on the phone again. Shelley's been calling me recently. I want to ask you about this before we go into Joseph Parker. It doesn't look like we're going to get Deontay Wilder. We may, we don't know yet, but it doesn't look like we're going to get Deontay Wilder here on Saturday night. Now, obviously, you followed his career closely as well. We all want to see a showdown between Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder. 40 wins, 39 knockouts, Olympic bronze medalist, a potential star in the United States yet to really burst. And, you know, the opportunity for big mega fight, super fight, heavyweight fights again in America, which we hope for on this side of the pond. What's your take on if Deontay Wilder doesn't come, why he decided not to come?
It's a mistake. I think he should definitely be here. He said he was coming. They started to build up his arrival. I think it would have been great theater. And I'm not one who's partial to theater very often. But for this particular moment, I think it would have been great theater. They said, oh, you can't get in the ring and all this. If he was sitting ringside when this fight is over, there's no way he doesn't get in the ring. And not because the fight needs to be made, as Joshua says first, so this isn't just hype. It's not hype because they're both heavyweight champions. The fight needs to get made, and seeing them face-to-face sometimes solves problems. Sometimes it does resolve some of these surrounding issues where two guys look each other in the eye and like, you know what? I want to punch you in the face.
And they feel the energy together, the chemistry almost.
The audience gets to feel it.
Even if it's fistic chemistry.
The fighters get to feel it. Promoters get excited by it. And it actually, I feel, in this particular situation, might actually move the event forward.
I agree.
With that said, why he's not showing up or what his thinking is as to changing his mind, I have no idea. I don't want to
second guess him.
Yeah, I'm second guessing him. I think he should show up. Why he's decided not to, I don't know what his reasons are. But regardless of whether or not he comes, the fight's going to get made. I think we might have to wait a year for it.
I agree.
These guys are definitely going to take interim fights. That fight will be the biggest thing in my lifetime in boxing. If both these guys get there undefeated and their records untarnished, especially if they continue with these knockout streaks, that's going to be the biggest thing in boxing I've seen with my own eyes.
Who would you favor in that fight at the moment?
Now, here's the issue. I can't tell you yet because I haven't seen them in training for that fight.
I have no issue with that because I'm exactly the same place. Having been at Wilder against Ortiz, Luis Ortiz, I was so impressed with Deontay Wilder. For me, it was kind of almost like watching a mirror image of what happened with Anthony Joshua and Vladimir Klitschko, where he'd hurt the guy, he got him down early, then he had to go through a torrid tunnel himself for a while and proved he's got heart, stamina, chin, champion's abilities, and then came back and finished the job. And, you know, against an older man.
Right, well, let me say this. The reason I can't tell you yet is when I say I haven't seen them prepared for this fight, I mean in the sense that they're going to have to both, once their focus is on the other, decide what their game plan is going to be. Things like coming in to camp fit, which Joshua's done for this fight. Things like Wilder deciding that, hey, maybe just a big punch isn't enough. Maybe I need to get some boxing acumen. Those are the kind of decisions that can only be made when the fight is signed. And I will say for the sake of this broadcast, right now in this moment, I feel like Joshua is more prepared for that moment. Doesn't mean that he's going to win the fight for sure, but right now, where his mind is, where his abilities are, where his boxing skill is, if that moment were to come, that big spotlight for what would be necessary to win on that night, I think Joshua is better prepared to win. Can Deontay Wilder find the solution? Absolutely. Will he? We don't know until that fight happens.
It's funny, you know, because you and I even off you know, off recording, were chatting just last night after the public workouts over whether, you know, it would happen in America, whether it would happen in the UK. And one of the things that I was considering last night, I mean, because I think it will happen in America, mainly because there's a big audience that will watch a fight at 4 a.m. in the UK. And, you know, there's obviously, you know, kind of site fees and all those kind of things that happen in America, and the chance to really blow it up in America and maybe get a couple of million pay-per-views if they do it right. But in many ways, psychologically, for Anthony Joshua, to have it in a stadium fight over here, which he will have done maybe 4 or 5 times by then, may be a huge advantage when it comes down to it, you know?
That fight, for my sake, has to be in London. It's nothing to do, obviously, with nationalism or personal pride or advantage to one guy or the other. I've been here enough. I've taken the Pepsi challenge. The audience that will arrive in that arena on that night in London is incomparable. And the energy that that would feed the fight, you have what's going to be, look, the way it's going to be promoted is it's going to be white hat, black hat. Wilder, I think, is going to be comfortable in the black hat role.
In the that's the villain, you mean, all of that.
That's
kind
what
of,
I mean. Yeah, yeah. He's the villain. He's
the,
you know,
bad
he's
boy.
A, he's,
yeah.
he's got the bravado. He like, yeah, talks yeah. loud. He curses a lot. He's a good guy. It doesn't mean he's a bad guy.
No, but no, I know that.
The way he presents himself
in terms of his
is
image,
like, yeah,
yeah,
you know, he's the rougher of the two in that way. And coming into the poster boy, the golden boy, the million-dollar smile on every billboard guy's backyard.
In the media capital of Europe.
In London, yeah. to take what could at that time be all of the rest of those heavyweight championships and coming over with his single belt and take all those back to America, that story writes itself. I think that's a much better story to tell, a much nicer narrative than flying to Vegas, where neither one of these guys is from, and having the usual run.
And only 20,000 in the T-Mobile Arena that we've seen before, so it's not special. And the other thing, of course, if that lends itself probably in that case to something like, I would say you probably couldn't do it because of where the stadium is, because there's no roof. Probably it's a late April to June, July fight next year. That would be tremendous.
Yeah, now here's the,
and then
the
they
wrinkle.
Can rematch in America.
Right, but here's the wrinkle. If it were to be in America, I firmly don't believe, I believe it will not be actually at T-Mobile. Remember, the Raider Stadium is being built there in Las Vegas. That is an open-air arena, and it'll be like a brand new facility.
50,000, will it be something like that?
Do we know yet?
You're going to
stump me on the seat number, but
it'll be
a new NFL stadium, so there'll be plenty of seats. And
that sounds great.
Yeah, that would be the competition.
But that can only be at certain times of the year because of the heat, though, presumably.
Oh, I think it's going to be hot in that arena no matter what time of year it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, man. That you know, so if that were to happen, then we're looking at
But March, April's not too hot in Vegas. They could do that outside, couldn't they?
Yeah, they could do it outside in the dead of June. It's Vegas, like, you know. They can accommodate for it, for sure. I just don't think that it will happen that way. I think we're going to end up over here on this side of the pond. And we should.
It's so exciting. I mean, I'm getting chills thinking about how this thing maps out. Anthony Joshua, of course, has got to get the job done on Saturday night, first of all. And in the other corner, let's talk about Joseph Parker for a moment. How have you seen him in the build-up? Did you visit him at all in camp in Las Vegas?
They've been very tight with camp, you know? And now I'll tell you something.
Does that say anything to you?
It says to me that they think they're reinventing the wheel, which they are not doing. It says to me that a lot of times when guys get that kind of, I call it a superstition, because you're not doing, you got two arms, two legs, just like the other guy. Box has been around a long time. You're not coming in with a third arm. Unless you're growing a third arm or a third leg, then I'm figuring that whatever you're doing is going to be within the realm of something we've seen before, right? So with that kind of closed-off nature, with that kind of real clannish behavior from their camp that has been up until this point, it makes me often feel like guys are nervous, guys are afraid, they're looking for, they think they've figured some one thing out that's going to change the entire fight. Very seldom is that true. But having seen him at the public workout, although he didn't do much, I realized that I'd never actually laid eyes on him personally while training, and I've never been in one of his fights. The first thing I was surprised by is how small he is.
Yeah, he could almost be a cruiserweight, couldn't he?
He could almost be a cruiserweight.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was looking at him wondering if the agility, it could be a major advantage. Like, could this smaller size help him a bit? And I think it'll help him survive a bit because he will be in and out quick. I've seen him be able to slip jabs and get inside on guys, but unfortunately, I think that's going to be his undoing. I think he's going to slip a jab or something, get inside, and get caught with a very nasty hook.
Or an uppercut.
Or an uppercut.
Yeah, which Joshua
right, which he's open
throw.
For. And I was surprised.
You see Joshua practicing the uppercut hook combination,
well, I mean,
by the way.
At this point, even though he's got a big right hand, we all know that, I think because of the Klitschko fight, if you were to have a Joshua video game, the uppercut would be the moneymaker, right? That would be the KO shot. So I think he loves that image of Klitschko's body being separated from his head with the uppercut.
Yeah.
And so that's
Joshua's
shot.
It's an iconic picture, isn't it?
It is. And Parker's open for that uppercut. Parker swings. He also leans forward
know,
and falls into his shots,
he does.
Which is a terrible thing to do with a fighter like Josh, who's taller than you, longer than you, whose straight shots come right down the middle. He's going to run right into a Mack truck, man, inside a six.
Well, that was, you came out of the blue
no!
there. I didn't want your
yes.
prediction straight away. You came straight out of the blue. I was building towards that. Okay.
He's going to run into the Mack truck inside a six. I haven't given you my final prediction of how the fight
okay,
ends.
Okay,
that's
fine.
The shot's going to happen in there.
So what you're saying about Parker is he looks quite small, but he looks lean, lithe, fast, all those kind of things. But there are technical shapes that he makes that you think make him vulnerable to Joshua. But what are the vulnerabilities that Joshua has against Parker? Perhaps Joshua doesn't move his head that much, for example. And if Parker can, he's quite good. He's worked hard on his combinations. Does he have the power to knock Joshua out? Parker's never been down, for example, in his amateur and professional career. Who has he fought? So there are all these factors, aren't there? It's kind of like one of those, yes, we think we know, but we just don't know in reality as ever.
Joseph Parker is on the unfortunate end of history because had he taken this fight sooner, before Joshua got in the ring with Takam, I'd have picked Parker to win that fight based not on what I knew then, but on what I know now. If he hadn't, when I say he, I mean Joshua, faced Takam already, what Joshua would bring in, he wouldn't be prepared for, and Parker is much better prepared to finish a fight, 12 rounds, and maybe beat Joshua on the cards than Takam was, right? Shorter, faster, able to get under shots. While Joshua's figuring that out, he could lose the fight on the cards. Unfortunately for Parker, Joshua's now figured that out. Joshua now knows how to deal with that, and Joshua is proving as much by the way he's coming in and conditioning. He's leaning down. He knows what it takes to beat a smaller guy who has shots like that. And so unfortunately for Parker, I don't see very many flaws that Joshua has that he can expose, because the flaws that he would need, Joshua's sealing those up.
As an American, I need to ask you this because we wonder about it. Does Anthony Joshua have the personality, the character, the standing, the bearing, the charisma to go to America and be a big star with the American public?
He has the ability to do those things without even going to America.
Wow.
Not because, unfortunately, of what is happening in the ring, which should take precedent over what happens outside the ring, but you have to understand America is a very commercial country. And the difference is, once the sponsors and brands get onto Joshua in America, the deal is sealed. You understand? Like, what happens in the ring will unfortunately be secondary to his rise to stardom to what happens commercially.
Because in the past, there's been no real kind of British sportsman. I know people like Luol Deng made it as a big star in American basketball, and the Chinese, really tall Chinese chap, 7 foot whatever he is. Gao Ming was a big star in America in NBA. Lennox Lewis became a very loved figure. And if you go way back, Ricky Hatton obviously was quite popular with Americans, but really only where he fought.
I feel like those guys you're talking about, they were known in America and their communities inside, Chinese Americans, British Americans, whatnot, supported them who lived there. But I'm not sure that
is it
in
different
any
with
of those
Joshua?
Cases...
Is it different with him?
I'm not sure in any of those cases that the Americans adopted them as their own. I feel like Joshua has the unique opportunity to become that kind of transitional or transcendent, I should say,
Why?
Figure. Because he's more polished than any of the people that you just named commercially. Mm. America is a commercial country. If they turn him into a pitch man, a poster boy, which he already is over here, he's not only experienced at it, but has a gift for it. He is media savvy. And as he continues to deliver in the ring, there's just no downside to it. Americans love winners, and he's a winner. America loves commercials, and this guy is a commercial poster boy.
Isn't it bad boys in boxing who've been the most famous people in America, though, really, in recent times? Floyd Mayweather, I say bad in terms of their image. Mike Tyson, Floyd Mayweather, you know, will he have to kind of roughen his edges a little bit, become a little bit more interesting?
Those are Americans. Those guys are Americans. They're organically part of a culture that are that's supported by their statesmen, you know? Those guys have a different set of, attractive skills to the
audience. Or
no, it's a trend. Like, okay, so you know, you're from a place. You're from Michigan, or
yeah.
You know, an MC. You're from New York. You have a history that's uniquely American that people glom onto. And as you succeed, we love winners. The bad boy thing is something like a Deontay Wilder has. You know what I mean? If he were to beat Joshua, he'd become a huge star almost overnight, and his bad boy image would then take on a personality of its own. But right now, the guy with the most commercial viability, by a long shot, is Anthony Joshua, here and in America.
So you, mister, you picked before I asked you to. You said round before round six, you're saying. Yeah, but let me just say, before we go into doing our actual pick, I've got to read the odds out from William Hill. The bout betting itself, Anthony Joshua has gone down to 1-6 to win. The draw is 28-1. And Joseph Parker has gone down to 9-2 from 11-2. So some significant money's gone on Parker. Anthony Joshua to win in rounds 6-8 was 15-5. It's now 4-1. Anthony Joshua to be knocked down and win was 7-1. It's 8-1. And both fighters to be knocked down was 8-1, and it's 9-1. But Joseph Parker to win in the first four rounds is 100-1. Where in all those odds do you see the most sensible betting, or even where someone might make a bit of money if there's an upset?
With my initial comment about Inside of Six, I threw you a teaser.
Okay.
I said he was going to run into that truck Inside of Six, which is what I believe. He's going to get hurt, and I think knocked down Inside of Six, but he will get up.
Oh.
He will get up, and I expect him
He's
to get
a proud Samoan warrior.
That's a tough guy that has the kind of chin that doesn't go to sleep on the first big shot. He'll get up, mix back in. I think he's also smart. He can hold on. He can get out of a round where he's in trouble. But by 8, they're going to stop the fight. And they'll probably stop it while he's on his feet, but stop it nonetheless. So I got Joshua stopping Parker at 8. But knocking him down Inside of 6, and I think it's going to be a fun fight to watch.
Anthony Joshua rounds 7-9 to win is 3-1. Joshua rounds 4-6 to win is 12-5. I've gone for these are two game plans that I believe Parker may have. The reason why I think they'll have two game plans is that when Kevin Barry coached or trained David Tua to fight Lennox Lewis in 2000. They only looked at trying to unhinge him with the left hook. Obviously, he had a left hook from hell, but that's all they worked on. And I think that was a dress rehearsal, even though it's 18 years ago, Raheem, for this fight. And Lennox Lewis is a completely different and more complete fighter than Anthony Joshua is now. And we're not saying that Joshua couldn't go on and have the standing that Lennox Lewis now has in history and with his legacy. But for me, I think Joshua, I do think Parker may go for broke early. I'm gambling on that. So I think there's nothing wrong with putting 20 quid on rounds 1, 2, 3, and 4 at 100-1 for him to knock Joshua out. Because if he hurts him like Klitschko did, and he doesn't have a big right hand down the pipe like Klitschko's, that's not bad, is it?
Not bad.
First four rounds. Put a fiver on, £20, a fiver on each round. Yeah. You're going to walk away with 500 quid.
Yeah.
It's not bad, is it?
If I was a gambling man, I could see that being a smart bet.
We're going, and with my Welsh accent, we're going down a betting shop now, and we're going down to bookies. We're going down to bookies now. But me and Raheem, we're going to put 20 quid on, like, innit? First four rounds, 100 to 1. Anyway, my feeling is that there's something about Joshua. I think he will prevail. Like you, I think he'll prevail. 21 rounds in the last two fights. I think his experience of those two big stadium fights will stand him in great stead. He talked about the frequency of noise having an effect on you, like it can smash glass the other day. Mm. And it was a very interesting analogy, you know, how a high pitch can crack glass or smash glass. And he was saying, the Klitschko fight, I tried to block out the noise listening to music, and it just made me nervous. For the Takam fight, I listened to the crowd from my dressing room. And he said, once you embrace it, it's actually a really nice feeling. I wonder whether it will have an effect on Parker, and he won't be able to pull the trigger as he thinks he will do. I think Joshua will prevail. I think his big jab, his fast hands, and I do think his hands are going to be as fast as Parker's on the night. We tend to underestimate him because he's so big in terms of his hand speed. The way I've seen Joshua over the last few months, I think he is confident. I think there are things about him that are vulnerable. I don't think he moves his head enough. If he does get cracked on the chin, I do think he is vulnerable. It's all heavyweights are like that. George Chavalo, who's not well at the moment, you know, he was one of the very few who was able to never be knocked out in a long heavyweight career. It's unusual. But I just think all the experience Joshua has, a lot of the same reasons as you, really. I can't believe you and I are going for the same round, because it's almost like anathema
on. That we... You're going for 8?
No, I'm going for 6.
Oh, okay. We're not going for the same round.
I'm going for round 6. But my bet is really between rounds 6 and 9. That's when I really feel that Joshua will win. We're between rounds...
Well, mine's somewhere between 1
six
and 12.
And 12.
For sure.
So you're not going for a draw then, no?
No. Oh, man.
Let me just say, your bet, round 8, is still 12 to 1.
Yeah. No, I don't doubt
it's not
it.
Not a bad bet, is it?
Well, I mean, 12 to 1 it makes it seem like maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Is that the...
No, the 10 to 1. 6 and 7 is 10 to 1.
That's, I gotta tell you. I love
points. Is
I love putting
most
stakes on things, but I'm more of like a, you know, you buy the next round kind of gambler. All of these numbers are a little bit German to me. All I know is that now I've put my prediction in the world. I'm assuming the odds will change within the next hour, based on my prediction.
No, they will. Parker's odds, just finally, just to round off here. Parker's first four rounds, 100 to 1. The next five rounds, up to round 10, are 80 to 1. And the last two rounds are 100 to 1 again. Parker on point, 16 to 1. It's not a bad idea to put a few quid on Joseph Parker in this fight. He's not as big an underdog, I think, as the bookies are making out.
I'd more likely put money on the draw than I would on Parker winning. Because to win, he's going to have to knock him out. He's not winning on the cards. It's not happening. And if he should win on the cards, he'll probably get a draw.
You've had a very good record so far of picking Anthony Joshua fights. It's been a pleasure to speak with you today. I've got this sneaking suspicion you're going to run away with the prize again on Saturday night, but I'm sticking to mine between 6 and 9, but I'm veering towards the earlier of those 6 to 9. He's shaking his head. He's rolling his eyes at me. I will not hear the end of it when Anthony Joshua knocks Parker out in the 8th round. It's been a pleasure talking to you, as always.
Always, always, man. And hopefully we'll be meeting up real soon for Parker. Not Parker, but Joshua Wilder, maybe. But so many good fights on the horizon. Can't wait to do this thing again. From Cardiff. And we have to mention this fabulous backdrop as well.
We're in City Hall here in Cardiff. And we are actually in the council chamber. And it is, we'll put a picture out with the podcast, because it's the most extraordinary kind of old panelled oak circular room that feels like an old druid's cabin.
Yeah, so thank you for seeking our counsel this day. We've been happy and delighted to put our incredible genius about boxing inside your ear, maybe make you a little bit of money.
Groesi Cymru bore da. You've been listening to the William Hill. It's Welsh, that is, Raheem.
There it is. No, I'm certain it's Welsh. It's very dulcet.
My dad's Welsh. It's very dulcet. Thank you very much. You've been listening to the William Hill Big Fight podcast, Joshua versus Parker. Enjoy the fights on Saturday night. I hope you enjoyed it with Radio Raheem and myself. Cheers for now.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.